From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. On this edition, our focus is North Carolina House District 20, which covers the northern portion of New Hanover County. Holly Grange, a Republican, was first appointed to the seat after Rick Catlin announced he was stepping down. She then ran unopposed in the general election and won. This year, she faces a challenge from Democrat Leslie Cohen, who beat out two other candidates from her party for the nomination. We'll meet the candidates in alphabetical order today. Leslie Cohen and her husband ran a commercial graphics firm for 12 years before transitioning their business to fine art in 2002. Leslie is a painter herself and says her work is in collections around the world. She and her husband moved to the Cape Fear region about 5 years ago, but it wasn't until the state legislature passed HB 2, yes, that's the one frequently called the bathroom bill, that Leslie Cohen was moved to become much more politically active. And she joins us now. Leslie Cohen, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much.
Today's interviews are pre-recorded, which means we are not able to take listener questions. Leslie Cohen, since you identify HB2 as the galvanizing issue that led you to greater political involvement, tell us why this law has personally affected you. Why this issue?
I am the mother of two transgender adults. So this law directly attacked my children's rights. And, you know, most people don't know that they know a transgender person. There are a lot of trans folks out there, and a lot of them are living in secret. Either they are presenting as the gender they were assigned at birth to the public and secretly living their true identity, or they are passing as cisgender in the workplace and in public, and people simply don't know that they have transgender friends or even family. And so I am very fortunate that my children were comfortable enough to let me know. And when I found out about this bill, when this happened, I was just devastated because transgender people are so marginalized and it is so difficult for them to live their lives. And so many of them take their own lives because they are not able to live as the person they truly are. And I just understood how damaging this really was. And, you know, I'm a mother. When someone does something that hurts your children, you have no choice. You have to stand up and act.
Now, this law has since been modified to take away the public restroom requirement, but it still, of course, keeps in place the inability of local governments to enact their own anti-discrimination ordinances.
And by doing that, people don't really realize how much that hurts transgender people, especially children, because our schools are unable to enact policies. So every family with a transgender child is forced to reinvent the wheel at a school-by-school level and try to get accommodations for their child so that their child isn't bullied, so their child doesn't end up not using the restroom all day. We have children who are getting urinary tract infections, who are wetting themselves at school because they're afraid to go to the bathroom. And this is just unconscionable.
What would you say to people who argue you're talking about such a tiny percentage of the population and you're introducing people who are biologically a different gender into a place that was, say, a protected place for another gender? You've heard this argument.
I have heard this argument.
There are a lot of people who believe that.
And, you know, gender is much more complicated than most people think. And there are more transgender people out there than we know. Right now, just between in the time from when my children came out till now, the estimate of how many are out there has doubled. But just on the estimate right now, there are more transgender people out there than there are Jews. So if you think about how many people you know who are Jewish, and then take that across the board, this affects a lot of people. And the other thing is, it doesn't really matter how many people it affects. We're talking about very, very vulnerable people. And, you know, this is a very, very important issue to me. And as much as I love talking about it, it really isn't the crux of my campaign. It's what got me involved. It's what got me reading up on what's going on. It's what got me listening to other people around the district and, you know, my neighbors, my friends, and made me realize that our legislature is making decisions based on political games and
what do you mean by that? Give me a specific example of political gamesmanship.
If we look at what happened with the classroom size bill, the idea that we want smaller classrooms is a great idea. Everyone wants more teachers, fewer students. That's not controversial, but it is expensive and you have to pay for it. And when they went and put that in, I don't believe that it was an oversight that wasn't paid for. And they had so many chances to correct this, and they kept going and kept going. But that was a great political bargaining chip. So when that bill finally came through to address the problems that were created by the class size mandate, they were able to negotiate with the governor and give him something. He could not sign that bill because it had the fix for the classroom sizes, and that had to be done, and they took it down to the wire. So they're using things like our classrooms, our children's education, to pass things that are not necessarily a good idea. And this is happening over and over again. That's what HB 2 was. It was playing political games. And so much of what we see happening, the things that we see happening with Gen X and the types of legislation that have been proposed by the Republican supermajority don't actually address the problem.
Well, that's a good example of an issue that is still facing the majority of constituents, particularly in House District 20. We're talking with Leslie Cohen, by the way, Democratic nominee for that district. She is challenging Republican incumbent Holly Grange this November. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. We saw a great deal of bipartisanship, across the board bipartisanship, in response to Hurricane Florence,
yes,
the legislative response. We didn't see that with the issue of Gen X and other unregulated chemical compounds in the drinking water supply. But both sides are accusing the other of political gamesmanship there. What would you do if you were able to set things up the way you wanted to set them up? We're seeing now utilities are creating their own answers in the form of Brunswick County building a reverse osmosis plant. But what does the state legislature need to do?
Well, first of all, we need to properly fund the DEQ, and we need to buy the mass spectrometer that they asked for. My biggest concern right now is that we drank Gen X for 30 years without knowing it. What else is in our water right now that we don't know about?
And you can't pin that on the Republican majority, because this is something, you know, the Democrats had a majority in state office in Raleigh for a very long time.
But when we found out that Gen X was in the water supply, we found out from independent research. Since the Republicans have taken over and have the supermajority, they have repeatedly cut spending to DEQ. DEQ is underfunded and understaffed, and that was done by the Republicans. Now,
but clearly, even 30 years ago, what was then DENR was not doing its job.
It was, well, part of that is technology and not knowing then what we know now. We now know that we have these chemicals in our water. We know that we have dozens of chemicals related to Gen X in our water right now. We don't know which ones in most cases, and we don't know how much in any case besides Gen X. The DEQ asked for a piece of equipment that would allow them to test and answer all of those questions. Those are the questions that we need answered. We know that we have these bad chemicals in our water. We know there is a way to test for them. We have the money in the budget to pay for that equipment. But Kim Moore's lobbyist said, you know, if you buy this piece of equipment and tell people what's in the water, they will be upset, and that will be bad for our business. And that was the decision that was made, was to buy the lesser piece of equipment that will not answer these questions, that will not tell us what is in our drinking water now that may be making us sick, and not allow us to test for how much of these compounds that we already know are there are in the water. They are actively keeping us in the dark about what we are drinking, and that is completely unconscionable.
The political climate that we're now in, we know it's more polarized than ever, and
Absolutely.
We know this trend towards self-sorting is not abating. That dynamic just continues. Do you think that we lose anything by continuing this self-sorting and spending time only with people who think the way we think?
That is definitely a problem. And that's a sociological problem that I'm not sure we can really fix.
Well, I asked this question because it is part of our political machine right now. There's less negotiation. There's very little compromise.
It is.
This is more about getting majorities. And you talk about the Republican Party. You're throwing some pretty serious allegations out there that state Republicans don't really care about the health and safety of the citizens.
Now, I want to challenge that statement right there, because I'm not going to say that they don't care, because on a personal level, I think that each of them does care. I think if you ask any of these people, that they can honestly and wholeheartedly say they don't want to make people sick. But I think there is a disconnect between what they are doing in Raleigh and the fact that those things have a direct connection to people's lives. And I think they have been able to separate those two things in their own minds, and that's what's happened in our public discourse. So there are these political games going on in Raleigh, and there's no
So you're saying it's not intentional, it's cognitive dissonance
in a way. I think
it's
cognitive dissonance. I don't think that these are evil people. I think that we need to step back and say, you know, all of these people in Raleigh are human beings, and I think that they, you know, they love children and puppies and all of the things, you know, all of the things we all love. But somehow you get into that legislative building and all of that gets pushed aside and it's just about the politics. And I do think that there is a solution to that politically. I think a lot of that is caused by the way our maps are drawn. Because right now we're in a situation where those legislators are picking their voters instead of the voters picking their representatives. And as long as we're doing that, we are not going to get honest, forthright discussions in the political arena about how to solve problems.
So what's the answer to gerrymandered districts? That's something the Democrats and the Republicans have engaged in whenever, you know, whichever party was in power.
We have.
So how do you get a Republican majority who has no incentive at this point to move to some sort of nonpartisan process? How do you get that process underway?
That is always the challenge, because when the Democrats were in control, my party did it too. And whichever party is in control is always going to want to keep control of those maps. But I believe we're about to be at a very, very special moment in North Carolina history. Right now, we are going to see a shift in this election. And it remains to be seen how big that shift is going to be. And things are very, very volatile all the way up to Washington right now. There is a lot going on, and none of us really has any idea where we're going to be in 2020. And so I think we're in a position right now after this election that both sides are going to be at a point where neither is really comfortable that they're going to be in control after the next census and the new maps are drawn. And in that position, we can really start talking about, okay, guys, enough is enough. Let's put this into the hands of a nonpartisan or a bipartisan committee that's outside the legislature. And I would really like to do that in the form of a constitutional amendment. Because if we don't, in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years down the line, we're going to find ourselves back in this situation. But if we can fix those maps, we can have a functional government again in Raleigh. And we can have really fair elections in North Carolina for the first time in history. And to me, that's a really exciting thing to be a part of.
We have some constitutional amendments on the ballot this November. One of them would reduce the maximum allowable tax rate to 7%. Do you support that amendment? Why or why not?
I do not.
Why not?
And that is not to say that I want higher taxes, but we do not know what is in our future. And if we are in a situation where we need those funds, why on earth would the legislature want to tie its own hands so that it does not have that option as a body sometime later? We don't know. We're doing something that is going to affect people forever until this Constitution is changed again. 100 years from now, this may need to be done for our great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Well, folks who are concerned about the Democratic approach to fiscal responsibility might argue raising taxes is how the Democrats would plug budget holes before, but Republican lawmakers have a $600 million surplus this year, which is far beyond what they even projected. So what would you say to voters who look at that kind of fiscal management and think, I couldn't vote for a Democrat, that's impressive?
We're not talking about an amendment that would lower taxes. Taxes are already well below that 6%. This bill in the short term does nothing. But imagine
the constitutional amendment.
Constitutional amendment. It does nothing. So, you know, I don't have any plans for a big tax hike. We have this surplus. The question is, how do we spend that to better the future of North Carolina? What do we do with those dollars? Do we go and continue cutting taxes to our most wealthy citizens and to corporations, or do we invest in our schools? Do we invest in our infrastructure? Do we set up rainy day funds so that when the next big hurricane hits? These are the kind of decisions that we need to make. It's not, raising taxes is not on the table right now.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Democratic nominee Leslie Cohen, who is running for North Carolina's House District 20 in New Hanover County. She's challenging Republican incumbent Holly Grange. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. Since Hurricane Florence dumped waste from hog lagoons and coal ash into North Carolina's waterways, there are new questions about the way hog waste is managed in the state. But hog production is also a critical component of North Carolina's agricultural economy. Is there anything to be done there, or do we just need to recognize that these natural disasters are few and far between?
Of course there is stuff to be done. There are best practices available to these farmers to better contain the hog waste. We need to sit down. You know, I'm not an expert in farming. I don't know how all of these things are done, but I know they're doing it better in other places. And we need to sit down and do some hard work and figure out how this needs to be done, how we can do it without bankrupting our farmers, of course. They're very important to us, and we need the food. And we need to look at how we can do both, because I believe we can. We can protect our waterways, and we can protect our farmers. And some of that may be moving more to plant-based farming than animal-based. Some of it may mean trying to move some of these farms away from the waterways. Some of it may be just better practices in how to contain the hog waste. But we have to look at a combination of solutions and protect our water and protect our economy.
The United Nations recently released a climate change report that sounds the alarm, emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions by 45% by 2030 in order to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius. Does North Carolina have any role in contributing to the effort to limit emissions?
We all have a role. And in North Carolina, we have a couple of really amazing resources just because of where we are geographically. We get lots and lots of sun and lots of wind. And we need to look at ways to harness both of these. And right now, we have a legislature that has actively gotten in the way of our progress there. We were second in the United States in growth of solar energy. and we are falling back further behind. We were second behind California. I'll take that any day. I was in Germany about 10 years ago. There are solar panels on every house in Germany. They are practically in the Arctic. When I was there, it was only, there was only about 7 hours of sun, of daylight at all a day.
How do you say the state legislature hampered the efforts to increase solar?
We have... I've got to be careful here because I don't have it right in front of me. But part of it is the federal taxes on that. But I think it was more the wind, actually, that the legislature is now hampering our work on. So we need to look at counteracting what's going on at the federal level for solar. I'm not sure, honestly, what's been done on the solar without having it in front of me, so I don't want to misspeak.
Fair enough. Another constitutional amendment would change the process for filling judicial vacancies. And the amendment actually says constitutional amendment to change the process for filling judicial vacancies from a process in which the governor has sole appointment power. Is that an amendment that you would support?
I do not.
Why not?
You know, it's funny that this legislature wants to take everything away from the governor. But then the one thing they wanted to give the governor was the power to shut down Chemours, and I find that really confusing. When we vote for legislature, we are voting under these gerrymandered maps. And we're never going to have perfect maps no matter what we do. So the legislature is never going to perfectly match what the people of North Carolina want, right? We're going to be a little bit off. You can't gerrymander the governor. We all vote for the governor. We all had a voice in that hire.
This was a really close election, though, that didn't get settled for weeks after the election. So you could say that half of North Carolina didn't vote for this governor.
You can say that. But less than half of North Carolina voted for these legislators when you add those votes together. So you have somebody who was a 50-50, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. This and judicial appointments has been an executive responsibility.
And that's
always
why some would argue, supporters of this amendment would say, governors just have too few restraints on their ability to pick judges. And sometimes they put political cronies on the bench. So isn't this about checks and balances?
Well, you know, if you were looking at somebody who was going to be on the bench for a lifetime, but this is just to fill until the next election. So if this is really a poor choice, you have a choice. This person is going to be up for election again very soon. It's just another power grab. It's not really something. And once again, all these amendments, the devil is in the details. And I encourage everybody, whatever side of the aisle you're on, go and read these amendments. Read the entire amendment. And remember that we are changing the state constitution, and that is pretty much for good. It is very hard to change it back. So if there is anything that you don't understand, if there is anything that you're not sure about, the safe vote is no. And so, you know, this is a very wonky technical thing. But when you look at it, all of these amendments just about say, oh, and we're going to fill in the blanks on this amendment after you voted on it. So we have to be very, very careful because we're voting on things that we don't have all the information on yet.
Where do you see the greatest opportunities for economic growth in the state?
I think in technology. I think we could be the Silicon Valley of the East Coast. And that's an exciting thing. We have such a great university system. And if we just think about what we're doing, set up the infrastructure, the high-speed internet, and really look for bringing these companies here, I think we could do really great things. I have a daughter who's a software engineer in the San Francisco area. And when I see how much she makes, it blows me away. And then I see what she's paying in rent, and I say, oh, So that's just kind of a living wage out there. And I mean, she was sharing a house with four other people, and they were paying $8,500 a month in rent. There is so much opportunity here if we just give these companies what they need to settle here. And we have beautiful areas to live.
Are you talking about corporate incentives?
Not necessarily incentives, but just setting up the infrastructure. If we have good schools, if we have the technology infrastructure, we already have these great universities. If we set up the technical university programs, the engineering programs, these companies will come.
And that's our time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Leslie Cohen, thanks so much for sharing
your
views.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up after this break, we'll meet the incumbent, Republican Representative Holly Grange. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.